Hello and welcome to another episode of the We're All Idiots podcasts. It's Faraz from London.
And it's Tanweer from Perth.
So this week, I think we're going to be taking on a slightly different tangent off the back of some of the news that we've been seeing and some of the stuff I've been seeing on my screen over the last couple of weeks. A lot of you have probably seen on the news how some people are becoming millionaires, even billionaires, overnight. And it's in reference to Shiba Inu, and we're going to touch on a few other things. But Shiba Inu is a cryptocurrency that started off as a meme coin, and it's had a meteoric rise over the last year. And looking on my screen, it's gone up 85 million percent.
Oh, yeah, wow.
85 million percent in a year.
Wow. So this I'm not as close to cryptocurrency as you are, of course. So tell me, you know, Dogecoin. So which came first? Doge came first, because they're both based on memes, right? And on dogs.
Yeah, Doge was first. That had that kind of earlier rise. And for whatever reason, another one popped up, and it was then a competition between the two dogs. And wow. literally last week, I was monitoring things a lot before this point happened, but Shiba Inu became a more valuable in terms of market capital coin than Dogecoin. And I was kind of looking at it and expecting it to happen a few weeks prior to that, and there was probably, I think, like 4 or 5x to go.
Yeah,
and it managed to catch up, but it's just crazy to think there's people that have made crazy amounts. You don't have to put much to be coming out with 86 million percent gains.
Jeez,
you're not putting much in to get a lot out.
Yeah, yeah,
and obviously the earliest bird catches the fish, right? Or whatever that is. It catches a worm. A worm.
So these people, I mean, you'd still need to take a little bit of risk, you know, initially. I don't know, if you put, let's say, $100, you know, it's like throwing money away, right? So at that point, these people are like true gamblers to throw money at something that's just, it's for a laugh, basically.
Oh, 100%. 100%. You'd have to have a low expectation of it pulling off. But at the same time, what we're seeing with a lot of this stuff is people are building communities around pretty silly trades. Mm. Same thing happened earlier this year with AMC in the main stock market, GameStop. Crazy things were happening, and I think a lot of those individuals haven't seen investing as most people have. They've seen investing as being something where you put money in a punt,
and that punt
comes through, and you get 100x, 1000x within a couple of weeks, which is, it's not normal. It's not normal, and I think it probably has an addictive aspect to it. When you see it once, you think that you're unbeatable. When you're getting any 85 million percent, you're gonna want to put that somewhere else again. Maybe not all of it, but a portion of it will go back.
For sure. And I think, you know, you these kind of people, or the gamblers out there, they would be hearing these stories and thinking, you know, it just has that effect on your psychology, right? When people hear about other people becoming overnight millionaires, and then the boat's already sailed, but then they would be putting their money on, you know, a lot of money probably as well, to just basically get a piece of the action. Remember, it was a few months ago. What was that game? GameStop, was it?
Yeah, GameStop. Yeah.
Yep, and that was similar, wasn't it? When people, it had already gone up whatever percent it had gone up, and then people started asking you, like your friends, and I think someone we know had asked you as well, oh, bro, can I put some more money on it? It'll keep going up, right?
Exactly. it's that kind of FOMO mindset. No one wants to miss out when someone else is winning. No one wants to feel like they're being left behind.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, a lot of these people will be left even further behind when they're doing such things. And the, like I said, the earliest bird catches whatever they're meant to catch. But yeah, like, they're the ones that are the ones coming off with something, but they're the ones taking the biggest risk as well, because there's coins like this popping up left, right, and center. There's cat coin, there's cat girl coin, there's an abundance, there's cat's claw, there's random stuff out there.
And so for every currency that we hear has gone up by 85 million%, there would be probably like 1,000 that come and go and people lose money on them, right?
These are one-off cases.
Yeah.
These are like Shiba Inu, there may be, well, there's another one that I know someone who's involved in this one, and it's gone up a ridiculous amount. It's been classed as the fastest growing crypto, because over the last 3 weeks, it's gone from being worth $100,000 market capital to $2.5 billion.
Oh, wow.
I don't even want to mention it because I'm scared that someone will FOMO in. But it's crazy, right? Like, those gains, it's not something that happens with every coin. Yeah. But it will always bring people in, because people want to become financially free, or a lot of people are struggling and this is their potential way of getting out. And it's the same reason why people play the lottery, right?
Yeah, look, I think it's not really if people are struggling or not struggling. I think, you know, look, money, you know, money is a very interesting concept. I haven't read too much history about money, but there's a book that I think you have read as well, Sapiens, that talked about money. And it's just, I always wonder what must have happened before we had money, because it was just exchange of services, right? That would have been so much simpler, because there's no sort of arbitrary way to measure value. I always think about what must have happened before, you know, what kind of psychology people would have had before money came into existence, because it just has some really crazy impact on people's mindsets. It's just ridiculous, you know, like people throwing money away on the lotto, or people gambling. Gambling in the short term is different to obviously addicts. Addiction again is gambling. Addiction is, you know, it makes you feel good. Winning makes you feel good, whether it's a lot of money or whether it's just something something else. I mean, it doesn't even have to be money in some ways when you're winning. But when it comes to just even thinking about a lot of money, people just go crazy. I don't fully understand it yet.
Two things that come to mind, I guess, is back in the day, I think people would have still gambled, but slightly differently. I think they may have put, instead of money on the line, it would have been like, I'll put my sack of potatoes against your barrel of beer. I have no idea, but like,
yeah,
it would have been like a barter gamble or something like that. And then about like how people are, this addiction to get, would you class the lottery as an addiction? Because people play it every week.
Oh, for sure. Lottery is actually exactly the same as gambling, 100%. In fact, on lottery ads, there is usually something down the bottom that says, if you need help, or you know, gamble responsibly, or something to that effect. Or if it's become a problem, contact this number. 100%.
Yeah. Because I'm reading some statistics about how much in America, the average spend or maybe this isn't the average spend, but it's saying I'm on a news article. Yeah, it is the average spend. $1,000 a year.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So well, maybe it's up to that, but like it's a hell of a lot of money. But
yeah,
the other thing that this is saying is that obviously $1 for one person means something very different to $1 for another person, right? If someone's making $500,000 a year, you're not going to be as worried about $1,000 as someone who's making 25K or 50K, right?
But
that $1,000 can have that same, has the same chance of result as the other $1,000.
Yeah.
So when people are gambling, whether it's the lottery or whether it's these Shiba Inus, these richer people have the opportunity to play that 10 times and not be so affected. But again, they can have a life-changing amount of money reach them, man. Like it's, I think that's well, the
what
scary
does life-changing part. Mean? That's the question, because a lot of research shows that lottery winners actually end up miserable.
Mm.
And I think something else you've mentioned in the past that, what was it? Something to the effect that if you start at a certain level, if you win the lottery, you always come back to that level because you just don't know how to use it.
Yeah. So I'm putting up exact stats on it because, 70% of lottery winners end up going broke and a third go on to declare bankruptcy, which is, it's crazy. But like, I think it's that lack of financial education and financial literacy at that point, because like you're coming in with, you could be anyone. Like there's people that are making literally nothing on a yearly amount. I don't even want to give figures because we're not here to cross what's love high. But if they are winning the lottery, that's sometimes 100 million.
Yeah.
Entering your bank account, tax free.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But you've never seen anywhere close to that in your life. How do you spend it? What do you know what to do with it?
One thing, you wouldn't know how to use it. That's for sure. So that's the having the financial acumen. But the other thing about, you know, research time and again has shown that money above a certain value does not make you any happier than... or it makes you happier at a much, much, much slower rate below that. It's something like $70,000. And I think the research has been conducted widely in the US mainly. So, and we've spoken about the concept of hedonic treadmill, where, you know, you've got a certain level of happiness, or you can call it, you know, whatever your level is, it's whether you call it happiness or sadness. You know, if you have a big sad event in your life, you will go back to that level eventually, pretty quickly as well. And if you have a big happy event, you'll always come back to that level as well. So it's there's like an equilibrium or a benchmark level that you come back to regardless of what happens. And this is why quadriplegics, for example, after being in a wheelchair, they research shows that their level of happiness comes back to what it was before within something like 12 weeks. It's the time frame is very short.
And it's we're not used to changing our lives so drastically. If change happens over time, you're more likely to just let it happen, right? And you're going to go along with it. But when it just flicks a switch in an instant, and it's not necessarily just about gambling or money, if there's a sudden change in your life,
that's a good point. I mean, I think that's probably a completely different point to the, you know, gambling or money topic. Sudden change in your life, for sure. You wouldn't have the tools to deal with it. And at that time, it may to feel overwhelmingly good or overwhelmingly bad. But I think what we don't realize at that point is that it's, you know, it changes. It's that kind of thing does not last. This is why, you know, let's say a big thing like buying a big house or a car, you get used to it very quickly, like really, really quickly. It does not make you happy for that long.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the bigger question to kind of look into is like, there's all these people I'm looking at stories right now is like the biggest amount here that I can see in 2002, construction boss Andrew Whittaker won a whopping $314.9 million.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
And it was like basically overspending, bad investments. He was robbed. And within 5 years, all the money had gone.
Oh,
and it's like there's two sides of this really then, because there's that way up where you're spending all this money, you're living this life that you're not used to and you don't know what you're doing, but you're spending this money and spending the money and it's still there and you have more and more and more until it's gone. And then how do you turn from that lifestyle back to where you were? Because it's where you were. And technically that is what is normal for you.
Yeah.
And you've
I think that would be an easier transition, to be honest, because you know that's what you know. And that's you know, struggles in your life really is what gives you purpose, right? When you have more money, you're not used to it, you spend it, and then you're back to knowing what you know best. And this is, you know, I think that transition would not be actually that difficult, to be honest.
Maybe, but at the same time, it's just, imagine you've got everything for a little bit, and then you know you're the reason why everything's screwed up.
Yeah, but that's what resilience, I think, is about, isn't it? Like, we are incredibly resilient, right? Everything, we know for a fact that when something bad happens, it's always worse in our heads than the actual event, right? Let's say, you know, you're anxious about something that may happen or something in the future, it's always much worse than your head than the actual event. So I think we are just so resilient that the like adapting to a lifestyle that is hard, I think it actually is not that difficult as we think. I mean, you know, people endure quite a lot of difficulties in their, you know, they might, I don't know, let's think about someone who's you know, a victim of domestic violence, let's say, and they've gone from a family living maybe in a nice house and having everything, and all of a sudden they have to escape from that life and they just live a really difficult life and they just get on with it. And it's, yeah, I don't, you know, I'm just sort of not articulating it as, you know what I mean? Like, you know what I'm trying to say? It's just like when hardships, when people come face to face with hardships, we just make it happen. We find a way to cope.
Kind of like backs against the wall mindset. And you have to always kind of come out fighting.
Yeah. Yeah. When it's, yeah.
Yeah. I understand what you're saying. I just think it's, I think a lot of the time there'd probably be a lot of mental health issues on the way up and down. Mental health issues in the sense of, imagine you come in with that much money. You don't know who to trust around you.
Yeah.
You don't know who to, because there'll be so many people at that point in time that will suddenly just come into your life. And this is where, like I've always said, I think it's important for me to to find the right person in my life to spend my life with before I make it. It's a weird mindset and thought, but like, it must be so hard for people. Like, obviously, let's take Jeff Bezos, right? He, from the start to last year or this year, whenever it was announced, he was with his wife or ex-wife, start to finish, right? When he had Amazon in his garage. And then there'll be other people who become wealthy, whether it's footballers, whether it's movie stars, or it could be anyone, right? Mm. Business people, whatever. And they're wealthy and they have this person next to them. But like, how do you know that that person is there for you rather than the money that you've got in your pocket? And I guess that's the thing that you'd have, the struggle you'd have when you suddenly come into wealth. And then obviously once it's all gone, like these lottery people, once it's all gone, will you have the same support around you, and will people be there in the same way that they were when you had the money? And two, like the mental battle that I feel like you'd have every single day of your life, knowing what could have been and knowing, but yeah, who, you don't ever know. We'd have to speak to someone who's actually gone through it to actually understand the mental side of things, because like, you could be right. Like at the end of the day, you're going back to what you were used to for 40, 50, whatever, however many years. But the thing is, there's lottery winners that have been there at 16 years old as well. So it differs for different age categories, but
it's not just people who have gone broke. I've read some research that shows that people actually end up miserable, maybe because of all these reasons, because of, you know, you don't know who to trust, you don't know how to spend the money, you don't have the struggles in your life anymore, you wake up and you're not, you know, you don't go anywhere with a purpose in mind, like you don't have you don't have work colleagues to talk to near a water cooler. Like all these little things that we think they're a burden in your life, they're actually, you know, they're just such a big part of your life. It's and I think that must be one of the biggest reasons, or all these reasons combined, that makes people miserable.
Here's an interesting thought then, off the back of what you said, right? You suddenly have $10 million come into your account tomorrow.
Mm.
Would you work where you're at right now? Would you resign, or would you do something else?
Yeah.
What happens?
You'd have to do something, right? So, I mean, in my position, because I have actually discovered something in the last few years that I really enjoy doing. So in my finance life, let's rewind back a little bit. There's no way I would have gone to work because I was miserable, right? It's not the right career. Wasn't the right thing. And that's how people feel most people feel in their jobs, that they would quit. You know, it's very fortunate for people, you know, people who find what they love and they love getting up in the morning and going to. It's very, very, very rare. So let's forget those people. But people who have jobs they hate, they would most definitely wake up and resign and not go to work. But then what do you do after that? Like, you have to find something.
100%. Yeah, you have to find something. But I think it's a matter of just kind of having that question. Because who knows, at any point, like these things are happening right now, I'm having conversations with people that have put in a few thousand into something and it's becoming a few hundred thousand.
Mm.
And when that happens, I'm directly having conversations with people. And it's making them question how they'd focus their time.
Yeah.
They've even considered... They've even considered just kind of just walking out of the office. And I think that's the interesting thought, is like, how does this play out? No one really knows until they're put into that position.
And unless, you know, if you're not aware of all those things, I mean, imagine how difficult it would be to deal with that, because, you know, we're having this conversation, but most people would not be thinking at that sort of level or emotionally aware that, oh, this is going to happen, so I need to still find a purpose and yada, yada, yada. You know, most people would be thinking, done, you know, I can retire at 25. That's not how it works, right? Because you can't just do nothing for the next 50 years with the money you have. And you think, oh, I'm going to invest it and I'm going to get interest and do get all these things and I just don't have to do anything. It can't. It's like there's too much time in your life not to do anything.
But then it's a question of how, like, what would you actually do then? Like, then you'd actually realize what your priorities in life are, right? If money is not an object, it's a good question to ask yourself as well. If money is not an object, and if money is not a barrier in your life, and assume you've got these funds, how would you utilize your time? Because, of course, yeah, you'd hope that you wouldn't just literally just sit on a sofa and let it burn. Yeah. Because the more recently I've just been thinking, like, literally every day you get is precious. Every day you get is kind of a blessing that you didn't know for sure that you're going to have, right? But when you're in that position, how would you actually utilize that time? And what would you do? Would you let's say you got a tap, and every time you open the tap, you just have money coming into your hands, and
you don't have to worry about it. And it's an amazing question, which, you know, the flip side to that is also then what's stopping you doing that stuff that you really, really want to do and you absolutely love? What's stopping you doing that without money? Because, and, you know, that's the really hard question. It's not easy. Like, in a society, like in the modern society, we are supposed to be on a path of buying houses and getting settled, and we make commitments, and, you know, things just things are such that you have to do those things that you don't love. But maybe that's what happens, you know, in a midlife crisis, when people go through quarter life crisis and third and midlife crisis, is when you start questioning those things and think, why am I not doing that? And, you know, this is what the whole Great Resignation is about. That's been happening because of COVID, where people are resigning in the millions. It started in the US, and I think it's just coming to Australia, that where people are resigning because they're questioning their jobs, and, you know, they've had a lot of time to themselves, or working from home, or in lockdowns, and they're just questioning everything.
There's two things that, again, I want to kind of touch on there. One of them is about the resignation thing. There was a survey that came out yesterday, where it basically said that low-income workers are more likely to quit. 4% of Americans have quit work for crypto gains, which is interesting. It's something I literally saw this morning. So of the people that are quitting, that's quite a high percentage to have come out just because they've made money from crypto. And there's probably other things as well, stock market, like making a silly amount from the stock market as well. But I think people get an option to change their life, and sometimes they just say, you know what, I'm just going to pack it in. And it's not a bad thing. It just allows them to maybe take some time to digest what's going on and make a decision. Yeah. It's probably better to make that decision while you're not leaving, to stay in what is constant right now, and to stay in what the normal environment for you is, and then make a decision not off of emotion of winning, not off of an emotion of having money come into your account, but off of a kind of more planning, and off of a bit more analysis of what you could use the money for and how long it's going to last you and all that kind of stuff, and sitting down properly and thinking through that. And then the other question is money the barrier? Linked into what you were saying there
Yeah.
Before, rather than thinking, why can't I do it now?
Mm.
Thinking, is money really the barrier that's stopping you from leaving something? Is money really the barrier that's not letting you go on a world trip or go and pursue some sort of dream? Is it something else there? Is there a fear of something else? Because it's an easy way to say, oh, you know what? I can't do it because of the money. But I think it's more about diving into your mind state and thinking.
Yeah,
just thinking more about, like, am I actually stopping myself doing something because I'm scared of what's on the other side?
Oh, it's 100%. It's always, I think it's always the fear, because, you know, it's like I was saying before about having things in your life, making commitments, having kids, having houses. And this is why I have a lot of respect for people who decide to, you know, do and struggle for a bit, or struggle forever. People in professions like, you know, healthcare and teaching and aged care and all these professions that don't get paid as much as being, you know, being in banking, for example. You know, they're doing it because they absolutely love it, not because they're making a ton of money. They're some of the lowest paid professionals in any kind of profession.
Yeah, I was speaking to someone just the other day, met him off of a TikTok channel that I just came across, and then had a quick chat with him over the weekend. And he had basically left his finance career and gone into teaching. And he said it's just so much more rewarding. And surprisingly, he's actually putting more time into that than he was putting into his finance world. So
yeah,
it's interesting. A lot of people think, oh, you know what, teachers 9 to 3 and you're done. There's just so much more time that goes into that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And
it's, you know, it's like you said before about life being precious. I think that's one of the key things that sort of drives me as well, you know, when I think of at least trying to do what you love, or not doing something that you absolutely don't love, is that thought that life is actually very short. You know, I've had a really close friend lose one of his close friends at about 54 recently. You know, he just literally dropped dead, had a massive stroke, never woke up again. You know, and you think about, I'm only like 12 years away from that age. And you think that, holy shit, you know, you plan for all these things in future. Maybe you'll do it when you are 65. You might start, you know, doing whatever you want to do. But it could be too late by then.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's exactly what made me start to just kind of think of every day as a blessing. Is like, the problem with society is we've got so many expectations, right? We expect, like, think of it when you break it down, think of it like this. We expect to take our next breath. We expect our next meal to be on our table. We expect to wake up in the morning and put our foot on the floor and be able to walk. We expect to open our eyes in the morning and see around us. Mm. We expect when we walk outside, we can hear the birds chirping in the morning. We expect everything around us to be as we want it to be.
That's like clockwork. Like, yeah.
Right. And until it's not.
Yeah.
We expect everything to be how it was yesterday, but at any moment it can change. We see it with so many things. We see people have injuries. We see people lose people around them. We see people lose their jobs. We see people enter a new life where they have loads of money. Like, anything can change, and that's the thing with life. Anything can change within a very, very short space of time. So the expectation of things to stay normal should not be an expectation, but a kind of an appreciation sometimes of things being stable. So whether you can see, whether you can hear, whether you can walk, appreciating those things, honestly, it's such a big mental shift, and the way it's kind of making me just a lot more happy and just content with small things that I was probably previously just overlooking. I think that's just something just that I honestly think it's a life-changing way of thinking.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I think it's probably a good point to sort of wrap up this conversation in that, you know, gratefulness, it's time and again, science has proven that gratefulness or gratitude just changes your brain chemistry and you start looking at the world differently. And the expectation that you mentioned is an interesting one, because, you know, there's expectations that you put on yourself, and then there's a perception of the expectations that you have from outside, right? That's like a evolutionary thing where we feel there's an expectation from everyone else because we are in a tribe or whatever, and we need to be perceived to be powerful, wealthy, or at least give that sort of perception. And that's a different kind of expectation that you put on yourself. And I think that's what really destroys a lot of mindsets, because at the end of the day, it does not matter, right? It does not matter how big your house is or where you should be in your life. Who cares? Like, people don't care. You think people care, but no one really, really cares, right? Even if they cared, they forget in 5 minutes. So... Yeah. So yeah, it's you know, I think at the end of the day, it's a good thing to sort of stop, be grateful about things and question a few things in your life. Like, you know, like we have been fortunate to sort of, you know, just get to that point for whatever reason, however it came about. But just sort of question or have a change in career, because it's never going to be as bad as you think.
Damn, we flipped the switch towards the end. It just went deep and philosophical. Obviously, from the start, we were talking about gambling crypto. Mindset.
We were talking about.
But no, I think it's been a really good chat. Obviously, if there's anyone struggling with any other things that we've discussed on the show, always feel free to kind of message us for directions of where to go to and who to speak to. Obviously, Gamble Aware or any of the other channels, and Samaritans, all these institutions that are there to help. They're there to support people going through problems. So if you are struggling with anything that we've discussed, I'd hope you can reach out to those or reach out to us, and we can point you in the right direction. But no, thank you for listening again today. And it's goodbye from London.
Thanks for listening, guys. It's goodbye from Perth.